All right. All right, very good. Good morning, everybody. It's 11 o'clock on April 7th, 2010. This is North Dakota Public Service Commission meeting in a work session. This is Kevin Kramer along with Tony Clark and Brian Kalk, all members of the commission. Staff members Jerry Leon, Patrick Fawn, and then legal counsel Annette Bendish at the table as well. There are others in the room observing and interested parties. This, of course, is a work session, which means this is an opportunity for staff and the commissioners to discuss among themselves the case before us, this particular case being PU09670, which is Minn Kota Power Co-op, Inc.'s 345 kV transmission line from Center to Grand Forks. The specific purpose of this work session is to, I guess, discuss a response to a letter that was received by the commission in February of this year, requesting some guidance from the commission and suggesting some deviations from some of the traditions relating to siting. And in the letter, Minn Kota lays out a number of very specific proposals and some interesting thoughts and ideas and some comparisons to how siting is done in other states in which they build, I guess. And so, anyway, I have read thoroughly through the letter and made a number of highlights and drafted several questions and have a lot of interest. So with that, welcome to everybody, and I would turn it over to my colleagues for their thoughts and comments. Commissioner Clark.
Well, just good morning and welcome. I, too, have looked through the filing and look forward to a good discussion today.
Commissioner Kalk.
Same thing, and what struck me unique in this one is that this is a full-blown NEPA being done on this as well. So that'll be interesting because most of the time we don't see that in our projects. So it'll be interesting to see how this all lays out with the different different layers of bureaucracy, if you will. Mm-hmm. So.
Good old RUS. All right. With that, how would you like to proceed, Tony?
Well, maybe we just get some general thoughts out, and it'll lead to a discussion. One of the things that struck me a bit, and perhaps concerns me a bit with the proposal, is that it almost seems to ignore the fact that actually, if you read state law, there is a corridor designation process and then a route designation mm-hmm. process, and almost assumes that all we have is a route process, and I guess presupposes that corridor will just be rolled right up in the route, which for a shorter lines has been the practice. But actually, if you think about the rationale for why we do a corridor certificate first, it's to address exactly what it seems like Minn Kota is trying to get at, which is you narrow down the list of possibilities, and if we need to make that corridor, you know, not 6 miles wide, but shorten it to some other length that even more closely crops that down, then it would seem like that might be the right way to go about it, because that's what's already set up in state law to kind of create this little bit different process that kind of imitates a corridor process, but to roll it into the route application to me seems a little bit like an odd fit given our state law. But I mean, I understand the need for some flexibility in addressing some of these issues. At the same time, it's not as if long transmission projects haven't been built in the state before. I mean, I don't know that I was entirely persuaded by, you know, the impossibility of designating a center line on a long project. And TransCanada did it, and that was nearly as long a route through North Dakota as this one will be. So it's not as if it's impossible to do it. I was a little concerned about the statement regarding that landowners may not want to sign until they see the route approved, which gets back to that same problem we had with TransCanada, which is that we don't wish landowners to perceive that it's the commission that has forced them to give up their right over signing that easement or not. It's truly a separate issue that's ultimately, you know, potentially an eminent domain issue that resides with courts, not here. Anyway, those are some initial thoughts. But, I mean, I appreciate that there may be a need for some flexibility. I think the commission has always tried to be flexible in the past when there are revisions needed. I think we called them refinements in the case of TransCanada, and we had probably half a dozen meetings with them where they'd come in and say, here's what we're proposing, here's how we've talked to landowners about doing it, and you're able to do it. I don't know that you would necessarily get away from that process even if you adopted Minn Kota's proposal, because even under Minn Kota's proposal, there are going to be times when they'd have to be coming in and asking for that sort of refinement anyway.
The 5-day, 10-day stuff, you know, stuff referring to some of that was also a little bit, you know, I don't like the presumption that if we don't respond in 14 days or whatever, that the fallback or the de facto position is their position. Just given that what I sense is going to be a pretty massive workload in this arena. But I had the exact same, the two thoughts I jotted down, in fact, were, does this 1,000-foot route permit sound, seems pretty similar to a corridor certificate. And I worried as well that some of what was, that the implication here was that we could be tipping the balance of sort of positioning, if you will, in the landowner negotiations to the benefit of away from the landowner in any condemnation proceeding, when actually the purpose seemed to be to avoid that. It seemed to me like it was just the opposite could be the case, but I'm willing to be talked out of that if I'm just misreading it. I thought the segment, you know, doing it in segments made sense. I think that's very practical. I think we've done that before. But like you, Tony, my mind kept wandering back to TransCanada. I kept thinking, now what did we learn? You know, that this is helping, and what did we learn that can help us? The other thing, though, you know, realizing pipeline is, just, while similar, is also very different in terms of its intrusion on the land. We do give, the staff does have a lot of authority with slight revisions and refinements once the order is issued to, and we want to make sure we maintain that. And in this particular project, given that both its length and its breadth and its the number of landowners, obviously the parcels that will be included, as well as the, you know, what is it, 12 counties, that we would, this may be one of those where we get a third-party inspector involved with us, but that's another issue for another day. And then how early we'd want to have them involved, it might be another issue. But at any rate, those were some of my thoughts. I agree. Brian?
Yeah, yes to all of the above. Jump over to legal for a session question, or even the experts here. But, you know, I wasn't here through the Keystone business, but I viewed it from afar, if you will. And so,
it was easy to see.
Well, but the you know, we just did one of these up. You know, the Williston to Stanley, much smaller, or Williston to Tioga, much smaller, and all that. But
it was 60 miles. I mean, it's not an insignificant.
Yeah, good point. I mean, so that part right away jumped out at me is almost an insult that, listen, this is no different than what we normally do up here. It happens to be a little bit longer. But the question, though, is that, you know, our process, by deviating the process, don't we just set everything up to be very vulnerable for additional legal challenges? I mean, just in the very beginning, wouldn't that be just, why would we change things unless an extreme need exists?
I don't disagree. I wasn't here for Keystone either, but I don't disagree, and especially when you're looking at a line of this size and this length. Are you opening yourself up for more legal challenges? We've seen them on smaller projects and smaller lines.
Uh-huh. Unless there's an overwhelming rationale that we need to do things and we can fully document why we can't, the traditional reasoning rules would not apply, would not work, and we go back.
Yeah, I actually think this is a line that's tailor-made for a separate corridor and route process.
And that's something that Alana and I have discussed, too.
They may not want to do that all the time, and some of it's just a legal risk mitigation strategy that it's, you know, you're giving people who might want to protest it two bites at the apple instead of just one when you do a corridor and route certificate separate. But at the same time, it accomplishes exactly the kind of, or a lot of what they seem to be getting at here, which is narrowing down the possibilities of where it could go and then refining it from there.
Well, in light of, you know, the recently passed law that gives the utility a carte blanche once you have a corridor certificate for development, you know, in perpetuity. Becomes pretty important to do that part right, it seems.
Well, I can, you know, flip gears the other way, too, is that, I mean, we need more transmission lines, period. But we need them built the right way so we don't do one, somehow gets built, but then we then have no longer able to build any more transmission lines in the state because we created such a stir around this one particular line that we, you know, there needs to be more lines coming through the state.
Yeah.
So that's, I mean, I don't think we're biasing one way or the other. It's just there's a need there that's overwhelming. There's also a need to make sure we do it the right way.
And there are ways to do these refinements after something's been permitted that are, and just because you have to move a tower 150 feet, you know, near Baldwin doesn't mean that you have to reopen the proceeding dealing with Grand Forks County.
Right.
With most of these things, it might involve, you know, a mile, but you approve it, and then it doesn't affect the rest of the line.
A question I would have, too, maybe to work back to the company, is that how do they define their scope of their NEPA? I mean, they've got to pick an area. I mean, did it say that in there and I missed it?
Well, I was wondering, too, there's never been any indication or request that the certificate, the corridor certificate, would be less than, in this case, would be 6 miles, would be the de facto.
But right? It seemed to me that the NEPA would have to cover the widest possible range of all this.
Well, that would be the study area, would be the 6 miles, right? Jerry?
If I remember the NEPA process right, they started out with some scoping meetings to determine what they're looking at. And it's similar to ours. It's a study area. And that application, NEPA, and the environmental impacts statement that comes out of it is actually quite similar to our own siting application that they'll file.
But did you just sense the width of it and the time frame that they were dealing with in those scoping meetings?
I think really they're trying to define what they're going to look at in the project in those scoping meetings, including areas.
So their preference would be to have a narrower area to look at so the scoping and the study goes quicker, I would guess.
It's probably trade-offs on that and trying to get a good alternatives.
Sure.
We have flexibility to narrow the corridor.
Under the rule, we do?
We do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We do.
Somebody doesn't have to be 6 miles.
No.
Yeah. No.
Okay, having heard our high-level discussion, Jerry, what are your thoughts on those as well as anything specific in the proposal, concerns or why we shouldn't be concerned?
Well, the idea of doing the project in segments and not having to submit the plan and profile and structure locations until, I think it said 30 days prior to the
construction
on that segment. If we can work something out that way, I think it would help the company a lot.
I didn't have any concern about that myself. I thought it seemed reasonable. And
it is tough to think that you're going to have all the structure locations lined up across 200 and some miles, and then something moves a little bit, and you're back in there and with the surveying crews and the engineering teams and stuff to try to redesign the thing, and so the costs add up. So I can see those arguments a little bit. I like the idea of having some time period where the landowners can come in and say, we don't like that structure location if there's a dispute or something on it, and they should have some course. As it is now, our whole reason for approving the structures prior to that is to make sure there are no problems with the locations. We might be able to do that if somehow or other the landowners along the route are aware of the situation so that they know that when it's filed and that they'll get a chance to come in and say that they don't like those structure locations, so that they know that when they're being negotiated.
But this is after the... Yeah.
I mean, I'm trying to figure out why that's more efficient than holding a hearing where they can come in and say, okay, here's where they are. I mean, in some ways, it may make it more likely that we're going to have a series of, you know, kind of unending negotiations with landowners. You've got several hundred landowners, and they each have notices going out to them at different times that are 30-day warnings. I mean, how is that
efficient?
That is true. It's a trade-off thing, I think. If you end up with some landowners that are just going to be obstructionists and don't want the project at all, it gives them more of a chance to come in and...
Well, I mean, even if at a siting hearing you've got the best guess of where the tower locations will go, mm-hmm. you know, if you have a few dozen refinements after the fact that they have to come to us with and say, you know, here's what we found in the field, here's why we think this needs to be moved, we've talked to the landowner, here's their consent. And to me, that seems like a more efficient process than having this sort of revolving process of trying to refine what's happening as it's ongoing. And I mean, unless I'm misunderstanding something.
Another problem that they'll have is that they say is trying to get the easements all lined up prior to getting the route permits.
But that's separate from siting.
Yeah.
It's
so those are and we
exist.
Well, and we did discuss a little bit about separate corridor and route applications, and I can't speak for the company, but I don't think they were totally against it. You have to see if they have thoughts on that.
But even would encourage them to look at separate corridor and route. Because I'm sure I can't speak for the other two, but I mean, if the request comes in to consolidate it, I'm sure I'll have a lot of questions about why. If ever was a case that would lend itself to it, this would seem to be it. And if you're not going to do it here, would you ever do it? A separate corridor?
No, I have no disagreements with what you just said at all. I'm just trying to figure out the way that we can be there. We want this to go through efficiently, smoothly, save the company money, protect the rights, and all this, but it's just the part about the impact, the input the public has. If we deviate from the procedures in place, we don't give them the right opportunity, which we are starting to find in other areas of energy development, are coming back in different forms. So what's the next step then, Jerry?
Well, I don't know. We haven't said whether we would find the 1,000-foot wide route acceptable, or whether we're going to require the structure locations prior to the hearing.
But that's my point, though, Jerry. Why would we do something like that with a significant change in policy without getting more input other than just us sitting around the table here? I mean, why would we do that?
Patrick.
I do like the idea of having a separate corridor and route process in this particular case. And if we do have a corridor application separate, they can pick their study area, the commission can study it, and designate a 1,000-foot wide route or a corridor. The commission could designate that or some other width for a corridor. And perhaps you wouldn't need to address any of the other issues until after you hear some of the issues related to the corridor. You wouldn't have to address the route and where the structures are going to be yet. You'd go through the first part and then have them file the route application after that.
Now, I mean, realizing this is a very aggressive timeline, it seems to me. I mean, we're talking about 2013, in 2013, I mean, in service date. Am I just imagining that?
I think that sounded right. It was going to be, I think, kind of phased in with the
right.
phase out of the...
Right. But Patrick, your point is if they do a thorough job on a 1,000-foot corridor, that really makes the rest quite...
In my mind, because of the new law, the corridor now is very important to study carefully.
Yes.
And get it right.
Well. And the law supports a lot of freedom of movement, if you will, inside
that
corridor.
Right.
That makes sense.
In perpetuity.
In perpetuity.
Yeah, and if you do a thorough corridor first, everything else may fall into place after it and work itself out. Because by then, the landowners know who they're going to be, and the company is working with landowners, you would suspect, to get appropriate center line and tower locations.
If the corridor is 1,000 feet, that is pretty much defining the route.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I would leave it to the company to define what they want to submit as a appropriate corridor, understanding that we're probably going to be fairly flexible on what the corridor width is.
But we're sticking to the process. We're making it through. We're giving flexibility as time goes on. That makes sense. Because like you said, if we do a good corridor study, the rest just drops right into place.
What are the fatal flaws that we're not thinking about, Jerry?
I think it's all right this way.
You say this way, meaning what we're setting up or what they've submitted?
That's like when I ask the waitress what her favorite dessert is and she gives me four of them. It's not very convincing.
I'm wondering then how it would work if we were going to do the segments and the plan and profile sheets due like 30 days before or something. Or are we looking at, but as Pat says, we don't need to worry about that if we do the corridor first.
Right.
And that's a problem for later. So.
Yeah, see, providing the staking maps and things for the landowners, I like all of that. I'm not hung up on scene, plan, and profile, you know, site-specific drawings. That's never been a big deal in my world, but...
It's kind of the same thing as the staking.
It is. It's just not as intense. And that's gets back to your point, though, if we do a really good, thorough job of the study area and the court being a corridor, then the rest is easier.
The only thing that is an advantage to actually seeing plan and profiles and having specific tower locations is, well, I appreciate coordinating with landowners and I think they should do that and all of that. It does entangle the issue of easement with the issue of our siting of the line itself,
mm-hmm.
right? Because what we've always said, and which is true, is they're separate issues. I mean, we hope to get landowner input. But, I mean, what if you had a large landowner that simply said, nope, this is going to be eminent domain or nothing. I'm not working with you on anything. Yeah. How would you'd still need to, if you believe that this was the proper route, you'd still need to site the towers in absence of the landowner providing any guidance on where they may or may not like some of those structures, so you'd still need to get into that that particular question.
Yeah. Well,
with a 1,000-foot corridor, you're kind of limiting your ability to go around landowners.
There's no question. Yeah.
Which is?
That's the company's call. That's the risk that they run when they choose a narrow corridor.
When you think about the that Pillsbury line,
right?
That we did. I mean, that there was what, about a close to a mile reroute there,
yep.
And it was good to have that flexibility.
And I suppose if something comes up, you can move the corridor.
Yeah. You could.
Oh, you could.
You could.
Having to.
Well, we'd have to notice it and everything again, I think. And
Minn Kota actually mentions moving what they call the route, but it would be what we're calling the corridor. They talk about the potential for that happening in their letter.
Jerry, what do you think was the, or Pat, whoever, this is pretty significant.
Yeah.
Why it didn't show up 2 months ago, and this project has been out there for quite some time to give us, you know, why did this?
It did show up two months ago.
Don't worry. All right.
And actually, they had been in to see us before this too.
Okay. So
your point. I would get this is a fairly significant issue that change. If in fact what they're calling a route becomes a corridor. Allowing changes to the approved route after the permit is issued, if we either submit the proposed changes to the commission for review in advance or receive written approval, we couldn't hardly do that. I mean, we'd have to notice it would be a whole new process, right? If in fact it's the corridor that we're talking about moving.
Well, it would be a process like we use with TransCanada, I believe. We're
at a wider enough study area that.
Hopefully, you know, they would be able to study the area that they're, if they have a whole new route, they're moving it that far.
Yeah.
TransCanada would study the area where they were moving the route, and if it and a certain width on either side of it when they moved, and notify all the county and state representatives that would, that we have on our mail list.
Right.
They would send that out email. Short notice, and we would do those fairly quickly. Within 2 weeks, I think we did some of those.
I guess.
As I think through the plan and profile issue and how specific the tower locations need to be at the site of, at the time of when you get to the actual routing of the route itself, I think there is value to it because what it does do, even if they're not, exactly where they're going to end up, it narrows down the list of potential conflicts that landowners might have. So, the idea is, especially on a 260-mile line, you're not going to go through and say, okay, structure 275. Is here and
right.
And then okay, 276 goes here. That's really not the idea. The idea is that it's out there for everyone to look at, the general public, and you might have half a dozen landowners who come in and say, I kind of see what's going on in this section here, and here's what you need to understand about that. And so it gives them an opportunity to come in to us and talk about where there might be potential conflicts, but it narrows down the scope of the conflicts themselves. Barring that, how would you know what to even shoot at if you're, a landowner? You want the commission to consider something, whatever it is, and even maybe less important than the tower locations themselves is the center line.
Center line, yeah. And we've allowed a fair bit of flexibility within the center line, of course, up and down the center line.
And off to the sides a little bit, too, as we move stuff around.
Those are, yeah, right.
I was sitting thinking, wondering if some kind of preliminary structure map locations that weren't surveyed would be worth doing.
I think that'd probably be adequate. And call it a preliminary. This is once we get to the route. We're not talking about the corridor.
Yeah.
Once we get to the route.
You know, the my question about 2 months, I mean, I'll give the company some leeway here. I mean, this was sitting here in our office 2 months ago. It illustrates the problem we have with staffing availability on transmission planning. I mean, we got one guy here doing all the stuff. I mean, I just, from this point forward, I think this project, we need to make this a bigger priority inside the organization here, coupled with everything else. But we may have to look at assigning priorities to things for our staff before they come to us now. Because me particularly, this is a pretty big project.
We don't have an application yet, right? Either, so
well, so okay,
there's nothing for us to act on. Really.
So, but then let's go back to that though. They wanted a decision on this as early as possible. So then, okay, but then how does it get into the flow? We get to this point right here because we've essentially wasted 2 months of planning somewhere. So I mean, what type of review did it take to get this to us today?
Yeah, and the ball got dropped on this.
No, I'm not saying, Adair, I know that you've got a gazillion things going on, so that's not the case so much. It's just we may want to, I don't know how to do it, but maybe it's a discussion for our directors' meetings, but some of these things that we maybe have wasted some time here that we didn't need to.
Well, it's going to get worse because we're going to get a resignation soon.
Well, and that's the challenges of trying to meet these requirements with the staff that we have to keep the companies doing what they're supposed to be doing. So I guess that's a separate scheduling item. But from this point forward, though, how quickly can we get them back their answer so they can proceed with whatever course they're going to proceed with to get the schedule, keep it flowing?
What answer are we giving?
Well, I think that's what we're coming to here is that, you know, we like to –
I
personally
like to – letter response. I mean, obviously, they're listening in. Yeah. But the I think the contents of the letter, the commission had an opportunity to discuss this, and I think the basic thing is we're recommending a separate corridor and route permit, and much of what they propose to gain by efficiencies in getting a general area for where the line might go, we believe can be done through the corridor designation process, which will then facilitate a much easier route designation process after that.
Right.
Well, the proposing construction begins a year from now, so that's, you know, I don't know how that will impact. But you're right, if a real good, thorough, fairly specific corridor study is done, perhaps we'd go to work on that.
Well, and remember, I mean, at the end of the day, it's still largely, the timeline's largely controlled by the company itself based on when they submit the application, which we don't have right now.
Right. Well, that's a key point.
And the application,
we did waive the one-year
We waived the one-year letter of intent. The application for the corridor and route can come in simultaneously, I mean, really. I mean, the question of when we procedurally scheduled the hearings might be a separate matter.
No, but that's a key point, though, is I sometimes forget that we always waive these one-year waiting periods, which then puts more burden on our staff to try to do everything immediately.
And I mean, typically, we waive not only the one-year period, but also then consolidated the
route.
And there is a request in their letter of intent for consolidating the route and corridor applications, but...
Was it? Okay.
But at least we didn't... We didn't turn it to one day. We didn't waive the 1 year to one day. Because I suppose the company wasn't.
But that's the point, though, is we get the response back that's on them to get the application, and then we roll. But until we get that, then that's...
Well, and this is clearly one, I think, that we need to think about hiring out.
Yep.
I do, too. I think so, too. The other thing to remember is where we're talking about 12 counties. you know, consolidating the hearings even. Yeah, I would say we will at least.
You mean the corridor hearings?
Yeah.
And perhaps route, but I mean, you probably perhaps need at least three hearings. One in the western segment, one in the central segment, one in the northeast segment.
We could pull a South Dakota and have 12 of them.
Or we could have three. Okay.
Who's ready to write a letter?
You're asking for volunteers. There, nobody's jumping.
Jerry's the best.
I'm getting drafted.
Jerry's taking notes, and I'll work with Jerry.
I'm trying to.
And we'll run everything by Annette.
Annette, any flaws you see in the plan from the your eye?
Do you see any flaws in our thinking in terms of are we overly paranoid or are we overly generous? Good answer.
John and I have had some of these same discussions about this project.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is if you try to get too cute, you end up spending more time than you would have in the long run. You know what I mean? If you try to push things through, you know, and we found that with other cases. If
we expose ourselves.
More problems, you end up with a longer citing process than if you just would have followed all the steps and gotten through it.
Because in the cases where they've gone after folks, it's not so much the decision, it's the process. They skip something somewhere.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, we need this thing built as quickly as possible. It's the other side.
But quick is no substitute for proper.
That is correct.
Orderly. Especially when I consider, you know, Brian, your point that you often make, you know, the potential for other west to east routes. Now, you know, Center to Grand Forks is rather specific, but to the degree that a corridor could be maximized,
sure,
utilized.
There's some big projects out there in that northwestern part of the state that will need some transmission at some point in time. And if we do this one right and the public is happy with it, they'll be more likely to support other projects being built.
Yeah. All right. Anything else? Any questions? It's clear as mud. Scott's ready to write a very detailed, thorough article for the newsletter.
Are you going to tweet about this?
Would you? All right. If there's nothing else, we'll close the work session. Thanks, everybody.
All right. Thanks.